The Nature Stories podcast, where people and place intersect.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from BP, which believes that it's time to think outside the barrel by developing new sources of alternative energy. More information at bp.com/US.
I'm Samantha Brown, and welcome back to the Nature Stories podcast. Sometimes you don't pick your home, it picks you. This week on the Nature Stories podcast, producers Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson bring us a portrait of two people hijacked by the natural world. Whether they liked it or not, the Glen Canyon of the Colorado River made its home in their hearts. They loved it and defended it as their home ground, and then they lost it. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media with support from the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. The piece comes from Stories from the Heart of the Land, the public radio series about the connection between people and the natural world. Up now, Cry Me a River.
Governor Goddard, Senator Moss, friends, I don't know when in all my life I've had a more colorful welcome in a more dramatic spot. Walking down the top of this dam between the Navajo band, all the guests, my hat is off to the men who figured the stresses and strains and who diverted the river during construction, and to all the rest of the dreamers and doers.
There was nothing there. Nothing there. We flooded out the rattlesnakes and the prairie dogs and a beaver or two and a lot of beauty. But we created a lot more beauty. Of course, there's a lot of folks who think any dam disrupts the natural situation and therefore shouldn't be built. These dams are important for the benefit of people. These remote canyons are visited by very few. Certainly they're beautiful, but only a few can appreciate that.
That's what you're thinking then. The best thing to do with a river is to plug it. If you don't plug it, the water wastes to the sea. They didn't ask what rivers were about. All this happened because people did not know how to think like a river.
I'm Ken Slide Expeditions, All River Guide, Outfitter, Pack Creek Ranch, Utah. Age 77. I was raised with horses. My dad says I was conceived on a horse.
Ken is a cross between a movie star and your grandfather.
Okay, come on, guys.
I am Mark Malloy, river ranger for the San Juan River up in Desolation Canyon. He's taken a lot of people down rivers and on horseback trips and camping. When you go out with Ken, you never know what's going to happen. He'll pack you up in a pickup you don't know is going to get there, and you're lucky to get a peanut butter sandwich for lunch.
Moved my family from Salt Lake. And I said to my first wife, let's move to Escalante. Had four kids, took them all down there, right in the canyons. Take my trips out from there, river trips, Glen Canyon trips. I went and bought a few of the Army surplus rafts that they used to use in Normandy, plopped them on the river, and I was in business. Wasn't for her, though. She liked the city thing, so she went back to the city.
Ken was a boatman. He was running a river company. He didn't seem to have a concept of home or home life or not being on the river. I'm Brad Dimmock, Grand Canyon boatman and a writer. I started working for Ken in 1977. Ken lived in a truck at the time. He lived in the cab. He was just this old cowpoke in stinky dungarees and his hair sticking up and ill-fitting large-rimmed black glasses.
My river experience, I learned so much. Everybody I've taken, they teach me more. You had all kinds of people. I took diabetics, I took kids couldn't even hear, took quadriplegics. They want to do it just like I want to do it. If they want to do it and there's no way to see the wilderness, there's something wrong with our society.
Everybody in Utah practically knows about Ken Slide. He is very much a friend of the Navajos that live in southern Utah. My name is Bud Rusho. I was the public affairs officer at the Bureau of Reclamation at Glen Canyon Dam in the late 50s and early 1960s. He became such an environmentalist that when the county was bulldozing a road, an old trail actually, he laid down in front of a bulldozer.
I've changed tremendously from what I was when I was a kid. The early Mormon heritage I had. I went to John Birch meetings, campaigned for Barry Goldwater. It comes slowly, but I become much more liberal. The rivers gave me the confidence to do what I've done. The rivers gave that to me.
I was 175, the third woman to run all the rapids in the Grand Canyon.
My name's Katie Lee. The first time was in 54, in a powerboat, of all things, the first powerboats that ever went down the Grand Canyon commercially.
Katie is a huge part of the Glen Canyon story, and she's a fighter. She's pushing 90, and she hasn't given in yet. She is a handful, for sure.
What's your name?
Throckmorton B. Gildersleeve.
Throckmorton. I like that.
What's yours?
Katie Lee.
Katie Lee? Say, you're the girl in the picture in the billboard.
1948, I went to Hollywood. I struggled along until I got onto radio. I had a running part on the Gildersleeve Show. I worked in pictures, television shows. I played character parts and little tiny bit parts, walk-ons.
Katie's built like she's still in her 30s. Loves to be on stage. Outspoken, great performer.
It must be something psychological. It may be something very physical that makes me feel the way I do whenever I'm in touch with you.
In 1953, in the middle of that Hollywood scene, Tad Nichols came over to the house and he said, Katie, I've got a movie that you've got to see. And I watched Tad Nichols' first powerboat run through the Grand Canyon. And I sat there in absolute stony, knocked out silence. And I said, I have to get there. But I couldn't. I was struggling little Hollywood actress. I'd making $10 a week. Tad called me one night. He said, you can go down the Grand Canyon. I was to sing on the beach for the passengers. At night, I used to haul out my guitar. I was a professional folk singer and sing everything from Burl Ives, Irish ballads, and river songs. I just sing to the river. River was always singing to me.
Last night I lay in a restless bed, a humdrum life pounding in my head. When out of the night came a mighty roar, the river caught in me back once more.
She came along and sang her songs and fell in love with Jim Rigg, and that got Katie into Glen Canyon, where she totally went head over heels for the place. And she's got some great sexual analogies for that. Glen Canyon is really lovemaking. You know.
The Glen Canyon was 184 miles of pure Eden, with 125 side canyons. Colorado Plateau on one side, up to the Cummings Mesa on the other side, up to Navajo Mountain. And each canyon had its own personality, its own little call. And that beautiful, beautiful Navajo sandstone. God, there's nothing like walking. It's such sexy rock. Major Powell named it Glen Canyon.
John Wesley Powell, he was an early explorer, ran in 1869 and 1871 down through the Green and Colorado Rivers. One-armed general, he lost at the Battle of Shiloh. But he sat there on the boat in an armchair, and his boatmen were boating him along. He called it Glen Canyon. A glen is a little retreat up a little side canyon. Columbine and a little pool of water.
Ruins everywhere, petroglyphs and pictographs. Glen Canyon was the nursery. It was a quiet place in the river where things had a chance to grow, where evolution happened. And that went down into the Grand Canyon and kept it the pure and beautiful place it was when I first ran it.
Water, Colorado River water, could mean energy, could mean irrigation for the thirsty crops of upstream valleys, life for the swelling population as yet unborn. Downstream, the Colorado River has already been put to man's use. Hoover Dam, Davis Dam, Imperial Dam, and now Glen Canyon as it was, Glen Canyon as it will be.
I wasn't paying any attention to anything except the immense, incredible beauty and wildness and solitude of this place. When I heard that they were thinking of damming this river, I said, oh, they wouldn't do that.
At 11:30 on the morning of October 15th, 1956, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, from the White House, triggered a blast far smaller than the atomic explosions now nearly so commonplace.
I remember being in the canyon the day before President Eisenhower pushed the button and blasted the first blast off of the walls. And I heard the sound. It just brought me to my knees. And from that minute on, the songs turned into protest songs. Miss Lee went out to fight. Been fighting ever since.
3 cheers for the Reclamation Bureau. Freeloaders with souls so pure, oh, wiped out the good Lord's work in 6 short years. They never saw the old Glen Canyon, just dammed it up.
In the great era of dam building, there was no greater name than Floyd Dominey. Under his leadership, 300 dams jumped off the drawing boards and into the canyons. He wishes there were more.
When I was made commissioner, effective May 1, 1959, everybody thought that managing water was a desirable thing, and it was in the public interest. And we had no naysayers in those days. We didn't have lint pickers behind every bush. For example, Glen Canyon Dam was authorized in April of 1956. And we actually started construction within 6 months. Why, today, we'd have spent 6 months trying to find out where to put the toilet for the rock scalers.
What they had designed was to place a couple dams up in the dinosaur area, and one down in Glen Canyon and a couple down in Grand Canyon. The first ones they were going to build was up in Dinosaur. That was when the Sierra Club came out, and Dave Brower fought very hard against that, and they succeeded. But after they won that battle, they completely forgot about saving the Glen Canyon.
Mr. David Brower, do you have a greater regret in your life than Glen Canyon Dam?
Not yet.
I had just become executive director of the Sierra Club, and that was my top priority. Let's get Glen Canyon Dam built and save Dinosaur National Monument. Until I learned what was in Glen Canyon, I was ready to give Glen Canyon away because I didn't know what was there. The Sierra Club didn't.
We were telling them about it, all of us running the rivers. This is a big mistake. We had a little organization going, Friends of Glen Canyon, opposing this dam. And that's what Abby and I talked about around the campfire, ranting and raving against the dam. That was the beginning of his Monkey Ranch gang.
Ed Abbey and Ken Slight were real good friends. Ed Abbey wrote The Monkey Wrench Gang, which features a group of people who put sand and sugar in gas tanks of bulldozers. They tear down power lines to get rid of Glen Canyon Dam. One of the characters was called Seldom Seen Smith. That was modeled after Ken Slight.
Much of my writing, as you may know, is for the sake of environmentalism. And I've also taken part in a few demonstrations, engaged in a few illegal activities here and there, what we call monkey wrenching. People get unduly concerned over trivial things like tossing beer cans in a ditch along a highway while remaining unaware of the really, truly vast destruction that is taking place, whole forests being clear-cut, when the whole West and the whole planet is being destroyed by overpopulation and over-industrialization. Beer cans are much more beautiful than highways, in my view. It's the highways that are ugly, not the beer cans.
I knew that the water was going to come up. But when it did, I wasn't ready for it. When you actually see that water come up, inch by inch, covering all the beautiful things you ever wanted to see, the Indian ruins, that the Anasazi had built came up there and tumbled them over. Covered over the pictographs and the petroglyphs, all the writings. Covered up Gregory National Bridge and Music Temple. Cathedral in the Desert, Hidden Passage, all those beautiful things that meant so much to me. I was taking 12, 15 trips down there a year. Pretty soon you think that that belongs to you. This land is your land, this land is my land, you know, that type of thing. As the water came up, all the wildlife, they couldn't go anywhere. And there they drowned. The beaver drowned in the beaver. It was more than I could really deal. I've been an activist ever since.
Above the dam, the Colorado River was turned back. The brown sediment that clogged the river water was gone, leaving a sapphire lake of matchless beauty. Lake Powell, named in honor of John Wesley Powell, explorer, scientist.
I hate to even mention the word Lake Powell. We call it Lake Powell now. It's just a reservoir, big deep reservoir. The water is blue. There's no doubt about that, against that red rock. But my problem is I know what's underneath.
That story about Ken Slight and Katie Lee was produced by the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, with Martha Hamm. And it was mixed by Jim McKee. The piece was produced for Atlantic Public Media series, Stories from the Heart of the Land. The Nature Stories podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. If you'd like more information on the series or the podcast, go to nature.org/stories and send us your thoughts and feedback to podcast@tnc.org. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.